We're ready when you are.
Thank you, Judge. And Judge, this is my first time appearing in this courtroom. Is it the court's preference that I stand at this podium up front?
At the podium, if you would, please, sir. Thank you. It's Mr. Farmer?
Yes, sir, it is.
Glad to have you with us, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate the opportunity. The case that we're looking at with Alexander Edwards.
May I interrupt you just for a moment? Do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, sir, I do. 2 minutes, Judge.
2 minutes, yes, sir.
The case of Alexander Edwards has a horrific set of facts, and it's easy to get lost in that. It's easy to look at those facts and not consider what the issue is that's in front of the court. I'm not asking the court to consider whether or not a tattoo constitutes a wound. The court's already defined that as far back as 1928 in Harris v. Commonwealth. There's no doubt that a tattoo does constitute a wound in this situation. I'm also not asking the court if there was malice involved here. There's no doubt that it was a wrongful act, it was done intentionally, and it was done without any just cause. Those factors, though, are not enough. This court back in 2011 in Williams v. Commonwealth said that, quote, while malice may be proven, Code 18251 cannot be satisfied unless it's coupled with the requisite intent. Because it's difficult to judge intent because we have to look at the point of view of the actor, we know that it can be inferred from the natural probable consequences of the action, and often the Commonwealth doesn't have to show any evidence at all of intent because it's inferred from the action. If I were to shoot a person and cause an injury, it's inferred, or there would be an implication that malice, that there was malicious intent to wound, maim, disfigure.
And why wouldn't that intent be inferred here, given that the children were resistant to having these tattoos done?
Judge, I saw the Commonwealth's argument there that the idea that because there was either fear or because they were not desired would mean that there was malicious intent to wound or disfigure. I'd submit to the court that those factors get more toward the idea of malice and not toward the idea of intent to disfigure. That's what makes the act wrongful. That's what makes the act not justified in any way. But when we're looking at whether or not there was intent to disfigure, I think we're looking at the equipment that was used. This is professional tattoo equipment. If we're judging from the natural probable consequence of the action, if I were to throw acid in a person's face, the natural probable consequence would be disfigurement. Applying professional tattoo equipment to a person, the natural probable consequence is a tattoo result.
But the equipment may have been professional, but wasn't this the first experiment by your client?
It was, Judge, and I don't mean for this to come across as callous or inappropriate in any way, but anyone who is a tattoo artist has a first person that they do it on.
But usually it's somebody who would like the tattoo.
Absolutely, and that makes this act malicious, and it makes it wrongful, and it makes it inappropriate in every way. There's no way to justify the action itself.
But you acknowledge that these tattoos are permanent.
Yes, Judge, and the issue, the problem that the court is looking at is that when the court has previously tried to define disfigurement, they use the word disfigurement in the definition. It says that it's permanent and not merely temporary. That doesn't really help us. I think that it's more informative to look at the root of the word, or the prefix, the Latin prefix dis in disfigure means to separate, to take apart from, to move away, to make asunder.
But there's a disturbance of the skin.
Yes,
Judge. When you go into this, dig into the skin, there's a disturbance of the skin. Why doesn't that meet the definition?
Judge, I would say that constitutes the wound. There are three parts to 18251. There's a wound, there's malice, and there's intent to disfigure or maim. The disturbance of the skin is the wound. The action itself is malicious. But now we're trying to find out whether or not it was intending to cause a disfigurement. Again, looking at the prefix dis, you could think of the word dishearten means to take away heart. To disbelief means to take away belief. Disfigure would be to take away figure, to take away the form. This is an extreme example, if I were to cut off a finger, that would be disfiguring. If I were to throw acid in your face, that too could be disfiguring. A tattoo is not inherently disfiguring. It may be, depending on the tools. If I were to take a hot coat iron and burn a brand into someone, or some of these prison tattoos you see with a nail, that sort of thing, a natural probable consequence could be a disfigurement. But with the equipment that we're looking at, I don't believe that that's a natural probable consequence. I also look at the content of the tattoo itself and the placement of the tattoo. If I was if anyone was intending a disfigurement. I don't believe that they would tattoo the person's name on a shoulder or on an arm, or the name of a pet on an arm. Again, inappropriate, but if you're intending disfigurement, I would submit to the court that it would be something placed more visible, such as on the face or neck. It would be something where the content of the tattoo would be lewd or otherwise offensive, something along those lines.
So assuming we are following you on your line of thinking, wouldn't that be a factual determination for the trier of fact?
It would be, Judge. I would respectfully submit that the Commonwealth has the burden of presenting every element of the case, and that there was no evidence presented in this. When I mentioned earlier, there are some actions, like shooting a person or stabbing a person, where the intent to disfigure, maim, or kill is implied in the action itself. Using professional tattoo equipment to tattoo someone, it does not imply disfigurement, which places the burden on the Commonwealth to present evidence that he intended disfigurement. That evidence was not presented at trial.
And that evidence would most likely have to be circumstantial, wouldn't it?
It would, Judge. I would believe so. Again, I think that the Commonwealth, both at trial and in this appeal, is relying on the idea that the children were placed in fear. They're relying on the horrific facts of some of the history between my client and the children involved in this. And those, respectfully, I submit, get to the idea of malice. They don't get to the idea of intending disfigurement.
Right.
And respectfully, I would just urge the court to adopt a definition that considers all of these factors and reverse the case accordingly.
On the second issue, there's been a concession by the Commonwealth, and while the concession is not binding on us, assuming for our purposes at present that we agree that there was no evidence to support a conviction of conspiracy, is it necessary for sentencing to be redone, or would a dismissal and a reversal and dismissal suffice?
Judge, I believe a reversal and dismissal would suffice and would be appropriate.
Because the sentences were separated out.
They were, Judge. The sentences were separate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bourne?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Rosemary Bourne on behalf of the Affiliate of the Commonwealth of Virginia. First, I would say that the elements in this case are not mutually exclusive. The evidence that proves each element does not have to be mutually exclusive. So you can have evidence that proves more than one element in any number of cases, and that certainly could be the case here. And also, of course, under the standard of review that this court is bound by, unless the court can say that the trial court was plainly wrong in finding an intent to disfigure, which is the only issue that we're limiting ourselves to today, the court cannot reverse. And the evidence that I would rely on for intent to disfigure is that these were scars. There was a concession that they were permanent scars, and they were put on unwilling victims who attempted to resist. So there was certainly evidence from which the defendant would have known that these children did not want these permanent scars on their bodies because they were attempting to resist those permanent scars. And from that, the court could have inferred that he intended to disfigure them by placing a permanent scar on their body. Unless the court has, and I did cite the court to one California case where in the past, under a maiming statute that hasn't been specifically decided in Virginia, the evidence was sufficient where a tattoo was placed on an unwilling victim to sustain a mayhem, which is the functional equivalent of our maiming statute. In addition, I just wanted to say one thing, and that is the fact that there is a misdemeanor offense for tattooing someone does not mean that the prosecution cannot elect what charges it sees fit to charge as long as the elements are met. And clearly, the misdemeanor tattooing statute does not envision tattooing a minor against their will. It is just tattooing a minor who maybe wants a tattoo, but maybe their parents don't want the tattoo, and it's for health reasons. So I would argue that there was both factual reasons to distinguish that and, of course, prosecutorial discretion in this case. Unless the court has further questions for me, I would just ask that you affirm.
Counsel, this is a little bit off. neither brief addressed it, but it seems to me that the sentencing order is inconsistent with what happened at trial and the pronouncement from the judge. The total sentence imposed is off by 6 years. But courts speak through their orders.
That's correct.
So the order seems to give the appellant a 6 years grace.
Well, I mean, the court speaks through its orders, and I don't know at this juncture that, I mean, that's not something that we could have appealed in any event.
Correct. I just was wondering what your thoughts were on that. I just want to make sure I wasn't missing something.
No, we can say that it's a clerical error, perhaps it could be sent back, but
thank you, counsel.
It's unclear whether it's a clerical error or not. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Farmer, any rebuttal?
Briefly, Judge.
Yes, sir.
Judge, respecting the argument that facts can be applied in different ways, I would suggest also that it's tough to look at the marks on these children as scars and permanent scars that were necessarily caused by my client rather than as what they were, which is tattoos. The scarring, I would submit to the court respectfully, was caused by the mother's boyfriend who took a hot razor and tried to remove them. Those people have also been appropriately handled by the legal system, but I would submit that that was the origin of any scarring that happened there. Again, the idea of this unwilling victim being enough to show intent to disfigure, I would still submit to the court that this is something that gets to the issue of malice rather than the issue of intending to disfigure, and suggest that there wasn't any evidence that got to the intent to disfigure. And just leaving the court with legislative intent here, I don't know that there's a whole lot of literature on what the intent was of the statute, but I think it says a lot that this statute has been referred to constantly as the maiming statute. It's a step down from attempted murder. It's a step down from murder. When we talk about maiming a person, intending disfigurement, that seems to me a far cry from an unintended tattoo. I'm not saying an unintended tattoo should be the misdemeanor that was referred to earlier. I'm not saying it should be a misdemeanor assault and battery, which is just simply a harmful or offensive touching. But there are other ways that the legislature has of dealing with this issue. And to suggest that a unwanted tattoo is a step down from attempted murder, I would think is extreme. And so I would leave the court with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In keeping with the tradition of this court, we'll step down and greet counsel, and thereafter we will take up the case of Bryant versus the Commonwealth.
All rise.